My name again is Chris Atwood. I'm the features editor for Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise and co-author with Janet of the revised edition of The Passion Test, The Effortless Path to Discovering Your Destiny. And for those of you who are just joining us for the first time, these calls, twice a month, we interview individuals who have been extraordinarily successful in discovering their passions and giving their unique gifts to the world. And several months ago in January, we interviewed Dr. Wayne Dyer, who many of you have, I'm sure, purchased a copy of his latest book, Inspiration, Your Ultimate Calling. And on that call, Wayne referred to an ancient sage from the Vedic tradition in India who has provided this quote, which I think is particularly appropriate for our interview tonight. Maharshi Patanjali said, when you are inspired by some great purpose, some extraordinary project, all your thoughts break their bonds, your mind transcends limitations, your consciousness expands in every direction, and you find yourself in a new, great, and wonderful world. Dormant forces, faculties, and talents become alive, and you discover yourself to be a greater person by far than you ever dreamed yourself to be. Our guest tonight, Bob Scheinfeld, who is the best-selling author of The Invisible Path to Success and The 11th Element, is a man who is in his daily life proving that quote from Maharshi Patanjali is really true. For more than 20 years, Bob Scheinfeld has been helping people create extraordinary results in less time, with less effort, and much more fun. His passion in helping others carve out and live what he calls their ultimate lifestyle. And Bob is the grandson of Aaron Scheinfeld, who founded Manpower, Inc., the world's largest temporary health service. Manpower is currently number 176 on the Fortune 500 list and has sales of over $11 billion a year. And tonight, we'll get Bob to tell us a little bit of the story about the time he spent with his grandfather as he was growing up. Along his journey, Bob became a millionaire and a self-proclaimed stressed-out maniac, plunged more than $153,000 into debt, and then spent 7 years struggling with Murphy of Murphy's Law fame before he discovered the missing pieces, rebuilt his business empire, became a multimillionaire, transforming the other aspects of his life and beginning to live what he now calls the ultimate lifestyle. Bob's journey of triumph over failure, confusion, anger, and desperation qualifies him as an undisputed expert in the arena of business success and personal fulfillment. And along the way, he helped grow Blue Ocean Software from $1 million to $44 million in less than 4 years, resulting in the company being named three times to Inc. Magazine's Inc. 500 list. He also played a key role in growing a computer store franchise company called Connecting Point of America from $90 million to $350 million in sales. In addition, the marketing model and system Bob created has been used to pack the room at Tony Robbins' multimedia seminars. Bob is also a founding member of Jack Canfield's Transformational Leadership Council, and he lives in Virginia with his beautiful wife, Cecily, and their two children. Bob, it's such a pleasure to have you with us tonight.
My pleasure to be here, Chris.
And I am going to plunge right in and ask you if you would begin by telling us the story of what it was like to grow up with Aaron Scheinfeld and what you learned from him along the way.
Well, it's a fascinating story, and it ties directly into the topic. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you perfectly.
Okay. I grew up in this family with this gigantic international success story, and my grandfather, beyond that, was just an amazing man. I mean, he advised two presidents, and he, besides just building this gigantic company, was just an amazingly accomplished man, period. And growing up in this gigantic success story, there was a funny dynamic that I noticed, is that there was this rumbling within the family that there was something very unusual that was behind this gigantic success story. There was some mystery. But nobody was talking about it, or they didn't know what it was. It was just this undercurrent of mystery. And I don't know how many people on the line have kids that are constantly asking the question why and driving them crazy, but that's the kind of kid that I was. And so when I was 12 years old and I became very aware of this mystery, I was, every time I had contact with my grandfather, I was just bugging him, you know, what's this secret? What's this mystery? What's this undercurrent that no one's talking about your success? And he kept putting me off and putting me off. And then the extended family was on a trip to Switzerland, a small town called Cron, to celebrate his 70th birthday. And on a Sunday in the middle of that trip, he came up to me and he asked me if I wanted to go have a cup of hot chocolate with him. And you have to understand, even his family, you know, people didn't have cups of hot chocolate with this guy on a Sunday morning, but he invited me and I, you know, of course, honored and flattered and said, of course. And so we went to this little cafe in town and he said, you've been bugging me to find out what the big secret is. And he said, now I'm going to start telling you. And he proceeded to share with me a concept which will sound very familiar to most of the people on the call, but the way he took it was very different, and the way I've taken it in my life has been very different. And what he started to share with me on that morning is that there was an invisible source of power that was available to us and that we could tap, and that when you understood what that invisible power really was and you understood how to tap into it, you could do amazing things. And this goes way beyond what is typically talked about in terms of the subconscious mind and visualization and all the typical kind of stuff that I think all of us have heard about. And he told me that it was from this invisible source of power that he got the original idea for manpower, that he got the assistance to build it, to blow through resistance that they had when they were expanding it internationally. And he credited it with all of his success in his life and all aspects of his life, not just business. So the good news is he started to mentor me in the specific what I call mindset and strategies that he used for understanding this invisible source of power and being able to tap it on a daily basis. The bad news, it's not really bad news, but you could look at it as bad news, is that he died 7 months later before he could finish teaching me.
Oh.
So he really whetted my whistle, so to speak, and got me going and kind of introduced me to this fascinating world that, you know, what does a 12-year-old know about invisible worlds and unseen power and all this kind of stuff? But he had started to teach me enough that I had something that I could do, and he left a ton of clues. So I literally spent 20 years following the clues that he left. And obviously, I was 12 years old. I wasn't trying to do this kind of stuff full-time when I was still a kid and even in my teen years. But once I left college and started to go out on my own, I took everything that he had set into motion quite seriously and applied what he taught me and followed the clues that he left, sometimes desperately, sometimes just excitedly, trying to assemble the complete system that I believe he would have taught me had he lived to. Now, at the time, that was kind of frustrating, but as I look back on it, it was the biggest gift that I could have given myself not to have had the whole thing handed to me on a silver platter.
Now, why is that?
Because, and this, as you know, Chris, is a big part of my work now in terms of enjoyment and joyfulness and stuff. Nobody enjoys anything as much if it comes too easily as if they really worked for it.
Yes.
And if somebody starts you on a path and you have to follow the path and you have to go through ups and downs, and I went through some wild ones, and I, you know, blood, sweat, and tears kind of a thing, assembled tremendous breakthroughs and systems that I shared with others and used myself and continued to evolve it. And, you know, it's like if somebody was an Olympic athlete, you know, and they just stepped on the court or they stepped on the mat or they stepped on the ice and never practiced, never anything, and just won the gold medal on pure natural talent. This is not a perfect metaphor, but it's not as enjoyable or as satisfying as if they trained for years and didn't know if they were going to make it and had ups and downs and then ultimately won the gold medal or the Super Bowl or whatever it was. So
right.
It was a perfect creation to support me on my journey to be teased a little bit like that and left a bunch of clues, but having to do all the work myself. And so what that set into motion was twin passions. One was a passion for understanding and mapping out the invisible world and these sources of power that he introduced me to. And then the second passion to it was tying that into business, because like him, I had a passion for starting and building businesses, although I never had the interest in the complexity of a company as big as he built. And so that started me on a road from a very young age to I now call it spiritual entrepreneurship, for lack of a better term, but the spiritual is just the label to describe the invisible world for me.
Right.
And entrepreneurship. And so pretty much everything that I've done in my adult life since leaving college, has been in pursuit of those twin passions, with the invisible world being a much stronger one, but both of them being strong.
Mm, wonderful. So tell us how these passions then led you into the business realm. And you've mentioned that you went through some ups and downs, and it was a journey. So would you just share with us the story of how that unfolded, and how, what role your passions played along the way, and bring us up to just before we get to the work that you're doing today?
Well, the work that I'm doing today was the result of a series of breakthroughs, and I needed to go through a whole bunch of things before I was ready, so to speak, to be able to have a breakthrough like that. So to me, my whole life, everything that has happened up until about 2 years ago, was specifically designed to support me in having that breakthrough. And so to me, that was job number one. That was the top priority.
Well, and do you think that that's true for everyone, that maybe everyone on the phone, do you think that what they've been living through has prepared them for what's coming up?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I believe everybody comes into this life with a mission and a purpose. There's something specific, and it's not a one thing. It's a complex thing, but there's something specific that we all wanted to do or experience or whatever. And that has, and in everything that I have taught, and that's one of the things that I have not deleted by some of my recent breakthroughs,
uh-huh.
is that whatever your mission or your purpose is the filter that everything else gets filtered through, and it's the determining factor of what's going to happen and not happen in your life, no matter what kind of a result you try to produce. It's kind of like, if you remember the Star Trek series, they had a prime directive.
Right.
I did all of their activities, and...
Right.
Our mission and purpose is the prime directive in our life, and everything that happens in our lives, as I see it, from childhood, and there's even research coming out now that the programming process, if you will, the conditioning process, even starts when the babies are in the womb. So from as early as you want to say that it starts, throughout your life, everything is part of unfolding the mission and purpose that you came here for.
Well, and one of the things that Janet and I talk about is that your passions, the things that are most deeply important to you in your life, we feel are some of the clues to that mission or purpose. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the other things I've discovered is that you don't necessarily need to consciously know what your mission or your purpose is.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in some cases, I think it hurts to know too much too soon. A lot of people think they have to know what it is in order to be able to fulfill it.
Right.
You don't need to know consciously, and as much as you need to know consciously, you'll know. There's all kinds of examples of people that knew at a young age or knew in their 20s or whatever, and they were accurate, and there's all kinds of stories of people that thought for sure this was what their life was going to be about, and it wasn't. And there are people who had no idea what their mission or purpose was until they were much older in life, and I believe there's some people that died having completely fulfilled it, but never consciously knew what it was. It's just the conscious awareness isn't necessary, but it's still what's driving your life.
So wherever we are, any of us listening on the phone, it's okay to feel comfortable whether we know or don't know or in some state of in-between, right?
Absolutely.
Is that what you think? Yeah,
we all have our judgments. We all have our beliefs. This sucks and this is good and I'd like more of this and less of that and I'd like to change this or improve that. And most of it's nonsense and most of it comes from a distorted, limited perspective. But we all have that. I've had it. I still have it about some things now, although as a result of the new work that we'll be talking a little bit about, most of that has gone by the wayside. But, you know, that's part of life.
Right. Now, you've had an extraordinary adventure as you followed your passion. So tell us the story. You made millions. You lost them. You made them again. How did that all happen? What did you learn coming out of it?
Well, I had a pretty ordinary career, I would say, in my 20s. In early 30s, as I was kind of hitting my stride, both with, I'll call it invisible world skills, tying back to the journey my grandfather started me on, and business building skills. I always had kind of a knack for certain things, but once I hit my 30s, I had a lot of power going with the invisible world stuff that he had started me on, and on what I would call direct marketing skill. And so I got involved with a number of businesses that were not my own, but I got involved with them and I helped them to grow dramatically and quickly. And as a result of that, I was rewarded quite well. And I also did very, very well with a number of investments that I took, some of the wealth that I developed through those business entrepreneurial projects, and was able to parlay it in the stock market and in some other things. And then I was really riding high when I hit 31, 32. And that's, as you referred to, when Murphy came to visit.
Now, Bob, I want to interrupt you before you go into this next phase. You said that you, as you were building up to this, you had developed some power in your skill in the invisible world. And I'm not sure that everyone who's listening will understand what that means. Can you give some examples of what it means that you had skill or power in this area of the invisible world?
Well, when my grandfather started teaching me about the invisible world and the invisible power source and how he had tapped it, it essentially came down to the fact that no matter what result you want to produce, no matter what answer you need, no matter what help you may want to do what you need to do, there is an answer somewhere. And he taught me, and we could go a little bit, I don't want to spend too much time on this because it's not where I am anymore.
Sure.
But essentially it was a system for asking for help, for being able to tap this invisible power source for guidance, for assistance, for bringing people into your life, for whatever it is. And again, I understand this sounds very similar to many common self-help things, except it's not when you really dive into it. So
you had developed the skill of being able to ask for what you needed and then being able to find that it showed up. Is that?
Yeah, it's a twin gift, if you will. It's a twin skill. One is knowing how to ask for the help that you want, not of other people, mm-hmm. but by tapping into this invisible source of power and then being able to receive it. And actually, interestingly enough, being able to notice it and receive the help back is much trickier than asking for it, because it doesn't always come, it generally doesn't come in the way that you expect it, which I think most of the people listening who've had amazing things happen in their life, it's always come, almost always come in very unexpected ways, and that's the way it works in the universe, in my opinion.
Right.
So I'd gotten very good at applying the system that I had developed to get help on whatever it was I was working on. I mean, if somebody came to me and said they wanted me to help them start or build a business, and usually my role was developing a marketing machine that would drive customers and sales and the whole deal, and they never knew that I was tapping into the invisible world to get help with my part of it, but I was. And so every aspect of what I had to do, no matter what it was, if it was writing a sales letter, if it was later on building a website, if it was solving a problem, if it was whatever it was, I would use this system to ask for help. I'd get the help that I needed, and I soared in whatever I was doing. It was amazing.
Fabulous. So here you were riding high in your early 30s, made a ton of money, and then what happened?
My father used to call me Lucky Pierre, because I just seemed to have this magical touch, this Midas touch deal. So I piled up a whole lot of money from having done that. And then I left the corporate world. And at this point, I had perfected my, I'll call it invisible world system enough. And I was on fire about it. So I wanted to teach other people. So I left the corporate world. I actually spent 3.5 years, which you referenced, because one of the things I discovered along the way was that I'd always also had this gigantic passion for personal growth and expanding myself and teaching and helping other people. But I kind of said, well, you know, not this life. I seem to be doing business and other stuff, and I put that on the wayside. But when I left the corporate arena, I actually bought a Tony Robbins franchise, and I spent 3.5 years building that up and teaching Tony's work, where I was a facilitator of seminars of his and facilitator of seminars of my own and multimedia seminars, where it was part him on a gigantic screen on video and part us as live facilitators. And I spent 3.5 years doing that before I actually launched my own body of work and started sharing my own methodologies on my own. And that was a great experience, too, and it also gave me an opportunity to fine-tune my marketing skills. And then I just hit this wall at age 31 and a half, 32, where it was like somebody had flipped this switch, and all of a sudden Lucky Pierre turned into Murphy, and I could do nothing right. Everything I tried to do failed, got messed up, got complicated, got stressful, and I was hemorrhaging money for years until millions of dollars disappeared, and I ended up $153,000 in debt. And no matter what I tried to do, I could not right the ship that was sinking. And ultimately, I had to, in a major deal for me, I had to humble myself and ask my father to co-sign on a loan at a bank to get that $153,000, most of that debt was on credit cards.
Oh, dear.
And to help me stabilize the ship, because I couldn't seem to stop it from sinking, and it didn't make any sense to me because I've been riding so high, and I figured I'd figured out enough of what my grandfather had left as a mystery, and I knew what I was doing, and I knew how to tap this power source, and it was like, so what the hell is this? I didn't all of a sudden have all this success and then get stupid and careless and not follow what I had learned and had become masterful at, which some people do. They get real successful and then they get sloppy, but I hadn't done that, and it was just like, so what is going on here? And I got desperate, and I thought, you know, there's puzzle pieces here that I don't have. There's something that I thought I understood. I thought I had the complete picture, and obviously I don't.
Now, what do you mean by puzzle pieces?
Well, there's a lot of people at various points on my journey that have come to me and said, originally with the Invisible Path to Success work, and then with the 11th Element, and now with the Busting Loose work, and people will come to me and they'll say, this is really different stuff. I mean, this is not what you normally get on the street, and so where'd you get this stuff? And the only way I've ever been able to answer the question is to compare it to the putting together a jigsaw puzzle. When you put together a jigsaw puzzle, you dump all these pieces on the table, and they don't look like much, and you start assembling them, and it still doesn't look like much, but then after you assemble enough of them, you start to get an idea what the picture is. Forget, this isn't a perfect metaphor. You know what the picture is when you do a jigsaw puzzle, but suppose that you didn't, or somebody just dumped the pieces and didn't show you the final picture.
Uh-huh.
Then it starts to get clear, and then you finally add the final pieces, and all of a sudden this picture pops into view. And so on my journey, I got puzzle pieces from all over the place. I got puzzle pieces from my grandfather. I got puzzle pieces from books. I got puzzle pieces from individuals. I got puzzle pieces in meditations or insights when I was in the shower or driving. And then all of a sudden, like I'll be sitting in a movie or I'll be doing something else, and all of a sudden these pieces assemble themselves and a picture pops into my view. And then I start refining it and working with it. And so that's how it's always worked for me. Puzzle here, puzzle there, and sometimes you don't even know you're getting puzzle pieces, but you're getting them, and then they assemble themselves, and that's how my life has always worked with all of these things, including the most recent breakthroughs.
So there were some puzzle pieces. You figured there must have been some puzzle pieces missing, so what did you do then?
Well, I still believed in the core value of the system, even though I knew I was missing something. So I used the system, and I basically said, look, there's obviously something I'm missing here, so please guide me to finding whatever these missing pieces are. And again, this is oversimplistic, but that's basically what I did. And so, because again, you know, I used the system and it just kept failing for a lot of the results I was trying to produce. And then I asked for the help to find out what I was missing, and I was led to some more puzzle pieces. And then I thought to myself, okay, now I got this, and I'm not going to have any issues anymore. Now I'm just going to soar for the rest of my life because I got the magic. And what happened is I then got involved, as you mentioned, with Blue Ocean Software. It was a small software company in Tampa, Florida. They had just done $1.2 million in sales the year before. And they had great what I call raw material, but they had no marketing machine, which together with the invisible world skills, was my gift to launch them. So I got involved with them, and in exchange for my contributions, I received a chunk of the company. And over the next four and a half years, we grew it from $1 million a year in sales to $44.5 million a year in sales with outrageous profitability.
Wow.
And then software giant Intuit, that most of the listeners have probably heard of from QuickBooks or Quicken and their tax program, billion-dollar company, bought us for $177 million cash.
Wow. Every entrepreneur's dream.
Yeah. And I did very well from that, as you might guess. And so I was, again, now I didn't really get cocky, but I thought I had my act together. It wasn't, boy, aren't I great, I'm this genius or anything, but it was just, I think I finally got the system. It was the system that was important. It was not me. And so I was feeling pretty good at that point. And after we sold the company, I stayed on for a little while. And then I left, and I went on my own, and I took some time off. And then I decided that because of the demands of building Blue Ocean, sharing my own work, which at that point was Invisible Path to Success and also the 11th Element at that point, they were both kind of debriefs of what I had learned to date on my journey, those two books and the courses that go with them. And so I said, now I'm just going to start promoting and growing that stuff full-time. and I'm going to expand what I've been doing, because in the Blue Ocean years, I couldn't travel around and speak, so everything I did was remote with home study courses and stuff, and I said, I'm going to do some other things now. And I was pretty excited about that, and Murphy did not come to visit me again, but the Midas touch had clearly disappeared again.
Oh, no.
And so many things that I got involved with, projects related to my work, in some ways and in other ways, some parts thrived, some parts didn't, some other projects that I got involved with, I started hemorrhaging money again. And I wasn't in any danger like I ultimately became on my first, on my crash and burn that I described before. But at this point, I had a wife and I had two kids and we had a lifestyle that we really liked, and there were things and quote-unquote expensive things that were part of our lifestyle that we really enjoyed. And when I crashed and burned before, it was just me. And, you know, and then towards the end of it, my wife was part of it. But, you know, and I could handle that pain, so to speak, and she didn't know any different, so she had some struggles, but she could handle it. But now it was the kids would have to pay the price, and she would have to pay the price. And so I said to myself, I can't do that again. And I realized, which I don't know why it was such a shock to me, because you see it in the news all the time, but I realized it doesn't matter how much money you pile up, you can always lose it. And you can always go into debt. You can scream way beyond zero and you can go into debt. And so I thought to myself, it doesn't matter how much I've piled up this time from Blue Ocean and my other ventures that had been very successful on my second rise, if you will. And so I said, obviously, I thought I had my act together this time. I thought I had the whole picture, but clearly I don't, because here we go again. And I started to panic. That this was going to repeat itself and all this money was going to disappear and I was going to end up in debt and I was going to have to sell my house and yank my kids out of private school and undo all this stuff that we had done and that we were living and sell the dream house that I live in and love so much. And I was really panicked about it.
Now, Bob, I want to interrupt you again. So what you're saying to us, and for some of our listeners who haven't been through your experience, this may be a bit disconcerting, but what you're saying to us is even having acquired and saved up and earned some millions of dollars, you still didn't have security.
No, nobody ever has security.
That's now talk about that for a minute, because there are a lot of people in the world who think if they just get enough money, then they'll be secure.
Well, that's a gigantic myth. And we'll get into some of this later as much as we have time for, but there are so many myths that are running there about what I now call the money game. And that's one of them. I mean,
talk to us about the money. What is the money game?
Well, let me just finish the one thought first.
Okay, sure.
It ties in. If you study history, and if you study the media, or you pay attention to the media, you see billionaires who lose everything.
Right.
You see 100 millionaires who lose everything. You see deca millionaires, whatever it is, you know, 10 million, 20 millionaires kind of a thing, losing everything they have. You see people thinking that their money was safe in the bank, but then there are bank failures and the depression in the United States in 1929, and there have been bank failures at other points in the world. That your money's not safe in the stock market. It's not safe in commodities. It's not safe anywhere. And then you could say, well, I'll put it in my mattress or in my house or in a safe in my house. Well, it's not safe there either. It's a gigantic myth.
Uh-huh.
As I had these two experiences of crash and burn, this is one of the things that started to incubate within my consciousness, the fact that this whole thing you're taught about, this money game, was nonsense. And all of the rules and regulations behind it, and I'll get more into what you wanted me to say in a second, was nonsense. And not only did I have to assemble some additional puzzle pieces in terms of the invisible world power that my grandfather had talked about, but that there was an opportunity here to bust loose from that game and create a completely new game that really did work, when it was very clear that the money game, as it was, as we've been taught and as it's traditionally structured, doesn't work at all.
So I want you to talk in a moment about the money game and what it is and about this busting loose. So I have to say that for everyone listening, I had the opportunity to go through about the 13 hours of Bob's course on busting loose from the money game. Absolutely one of the most remarkable courses, programs that I've ever participated in. And it's a view of life which is very, very different than almost anything else that we see in the Western world. And for those of you that want to just, if you have to leave early or you want to check it out, then I encourage you to go and look at this website, www.healthywealthy, the letter N is in Nancy, wise.com /moneygame, healthywealthynwise.com/moneygame, and you can read more about this. But Bob, I'm looking forward to diving into this, and before we do, I just want you again to explain, what do you mean by the money game per se, and then we can get into busting loose from it.
Well, the money game has three words in it, you know, and the last word's game and the middle word is money. And so let's take a look at game first.
Okay.
Any game that you play, whether it's a sport or it's a board game or it's chess or whatever it might be, Monopoly, all games have certain things in common. They have rules, they have regulations, and they have structure. And if you're going to play the game and if the game's going to work, all the players got to follow the rules, they got to follow the regulations, excuse me, and they've got to stay within the structure of the rule of the game. And if they don't, they get kicked out or they get penalized or whatever it is, you know?
Right.
And the interesting thing is the rules and the regulations and the structure of all these games that we play that we take for granted are completely arbitrary, and if you look at them from an objective perspective, they're all somewhat crazy. I mean, if you look at baseball, for example, and you look at it like somebody from another planet might, you know, you take a big piece of wood and you whack this thing that's made out of rubber and leather, and then these other people have these big chunks of leather on their hands, and they try and catch it, and you run around, you try and touch these cloth squares. They have to take certain positions, and if you go around, you touch all four cloth squares, you get something called a run. You do that to any sport, you know, football, golf, basketball, and you take it down to that kind of a level and you look at the rules. They're all very arbitrary and they're very actually crazy if you think about them. But everybody who plays the game agrees to follow those rules and regulations. They never ask, where did they come from? They never ask, who thought of them? They never ask, do I really need to follow them? And in the course of you know, professional sports and in college sports and those kinds of things, you absolutely have to follow them.
Right.
Or you're going to get kicked out.
You can't play the game if you don't follow.
Right. Now, that's where the money game is different, because when we're growing up, we're taught that there's this money game, and we're taught what the rules and the regulations are. There really aren't any, and we don't really have time to go into that. We're going to give you a resource where you can take another look at some more detail of some of the rules and regulations and the confusion there. But some of the most common ones are that are the rules of the money game that we just all accept as real, and we accept as you have to live by them. They're etched in stone, just like the rules in sports and stuff are. There's a limited supply of money that's available to you. And so every time you spend, that limited supply decreases. You can lose the money. As I mentioned before, you can go beyond zero into debt. If you want to have more money, you somehow have to work harder or smarter or deliver more value somewhere. You know, you got to have a plan, and you got to save and invest wisely and build wealth over time so that you can have a comfortable retirement. If you got a lot of it, you better protect it from attack, because other people are going to try and take it from you. You have to be prudent and responsible and save for a rainy day. All these kinds of things. But the core of it is the first one, which is that there's a limited supply of money available to you. And somehow money is outside of you, and you got to do something to go outside of you and bring it back into your life so that you can spend it and do stuff in your life. And again, that because you have a limited supply, every time you spend, you have less, and somebody else has more. And so many people are struggling, no matter how much they have, to play this game. And there's a lot of other rules and regulations, and there's a lot of other confusion. Now, when I said all this stuff, most of the people listening probably said, well, yeah, that's true.
Right.
There is a limited supply available to me. And yes, every time I spend, my limited supply does decrease. And yes, I can lose it. And yes, I should be prudent. I shouldn't just go spending thousands of dollars on quote-unquote frivolous things. I should be smart about it, and I should be socking money away and saving for a rainy day and planning all this stuff. It all seems perfectly reasonable.
Sure.
But I'm here to tell you that it's all crap.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's not true. It is just... It is just rules and regulations that were completely made up to play this thing that's called the money game. You do not have to follow those rules. You do not have to follow those regulations. And you do not have to respect the structure of it. Now, I'm not talking here about doing anything illegal or opting out of the system or all these other kinds of strategies, crazy strategies that have come out over time to try and buck the status quo. I'm talking about And this kind of gets into something else that we need to talk about. But for now, the seed that I just want to plant is everything that you thought was true about money and everything you thought was true about the money game and how you have to play it and how it works is not true, is not real, is an illusion. And you can choose to bust loose from that game and play a completely different game where there is not a limited supply of money, where your supply does not decrease when you spend, where you cannot lose it, where you cannot go into debt, where you don't have to work harder or smarter in order or deliver more value to have more. Now, I recognize that this may sound like really wild and crazy stuff, excuse me, but I want to tell you it's something that's absolutely doable, it's something that's very practical, and it's something that I have done. And it comes back to when I was telling the story of what had happened to me is that I realized it doesn't matter how many millions of dollars I piled up this time, I can lose it again. And it's not just a question of learning how to master this unseen power source to be able to pile up more. Piling up more in your accounts is not the solution. Tapping into a different kind of a source of abundance, if you will, that has no limit and does not run out and that you can tap into and have a steady flow of it. The way that I like to express it is, I know we have international listeners, and I think that what I'm about to say is common throughout the world, but if it's not, I'll explain it enough so it'll make sense. In the United States, there's a concept, checking accounts, that's called overdraft protection. And what it means is that you tie some other account or source of money to your checking account. And if you ever write a check and there isn't enough money in your account to cover the check, there's an automatic debit from this other account that's linked to your checking account. Your check is always made good and you never bounce a check. Now, I call this other source of abundance, just for kind of a fun and sexy term, I call it cosmic overdraft protection.
And I love
that. And what I discovered, it was actually possible to do, and I understand that this may sound nuts to everybody who's listening, except, as you know, Chris, it's very real, and I'm living proof of it, and I can document it, and I can document the path to get there. But the way that I learned that you can actually create the game is to tie this cosmic overdraft protection, which is another source of abundance, which you could say is in the invisible world, and I think my grandfather knew this, although I don't know for sure because he never got there with me. And you can tie this cosmic overdraft protection to your checking account and get to the point in your life where you simply write checks for the things that you truthfully want to do with absolute certainty and confidence that the money is going to be there to take care of what you do. Now, no matter how crazy that may seem to you, just for a minute, think about what life would be like if you had a cosmic overdraft protection like that.
It'd be pretty awesome.
What would it be like in terms of what you might or might not do with what you do for a living right now? What might it do in terms of investments that you're dealing with or worrying about retirement or things about your kids? What kind of limitations that you're currently experiencing would go away in that kind of a scenario? And what I discovered is you can actually open up to that. And that's what busting loose from the money game and the breakthrough that I made that started a couple of years ago, and the actual breakthrough came about a year ago, has enabled me to do. And so that's what I'm now on fire about, is continuing to move more deeply on that journey and to help other people to do it.
So what you have been telling us is that, one, there is a money game which all of us have been trained to play from the time that we were young kids, I would say. Isn't that true for almost all of us?
Absolutely.
And we've been trained to play this game, and we've been trained the rules and regulations for that game, and some of us have gotten good at it, and some of us have not been very successful at it. But you're saying that it's possible, this is a game that we have the choice to step out of. Unlike if we're playing sports, if we want to keep playing the sports, we can't step out of it. But you're saying we have the choice to step out of this game, and we can step out of that game into a new situation which is actually more, it's not going to be a situation of suffering. We're not going to step out of the game and die. You're saying that it's possible to step out of the game and actually enjoy this cosmic overdraft protection.
And prosper in the way that everybody would like to prosper. Now, the other piece of the puzzle about this is you cannot win the money game according to the rules, regulations, and structure that we're taught. And again, everybody that's listening on this call has experienced this. But most of them probably think if you just pile up enough, then what I'm about to say doesn't happen anymore. And I'm here to tell you, from having become extremely wealthy myself and being able through my father and my grandfather and other business associations with some of the wealthiest people in the world, it never goes away. If you play the money game according to the standard rules, regulations, and structure that you're taught growing up, and that gets beaten into us to the point where we just never question it, it always leads to some form of stress, pain, loss, dissatisfaction, whatever you want to call it. It doesn't matter how much you pile up. There's always some cost. There's always some loss. You pile up a whole bunch of it, but you pile it up at the expense of your relationships or your health. You pile up a whole bunch of it, and then you find yourself in an extremely stressful situation trying to hold on to it or manage it. I'll give you an example, and this is a, don't take this 100% literally because there's other pieces to the puzzle. I know a man who became a billionaire, and to manage the money that he has a staff of 60 people. And he has to manage 60 people, and it's extremely complex. Now, a lot of people on the call would say, well, I would love to have that problem.
Right, a lot of people would.
Aspects in this particular person's life, this person is not a happy camper.
Uh-huh.
And again, you see this all over the place, and there are people that look at the super wealthy or wealthy or whatever people on the scale you might think of, and you think, well, those people, they've got their private jets and they've got their mansions and they've got their fancy lifestyles and they're happy and they're enjoying everything, and deep down we all know that's not true because we've seen enough stories of people that have hit those pinnacles and they become drug addicts and all this kind of stuff. We know it's not true, but it's such a sexy dream that nobody wants to let go of it. And so we all just blind ourselves to the fact that there isn't gold at the end of the rainbow when you play the money game. But there is gold at the end of the rainbow, and all of the fantasies can come true if you bust loose and start playing a new game with a different set of rules, which I discovered on this amazing journey that my grandfather started me on.
And I know from your work that you refer to these two games as the Phase 1 game and the Phase 2 game. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and what the differences are between them?
Yeah. I think probably most of the people that are on the call in one way, shape, or form have heard a saying that goes something like this. We are spiritual beings having a physical experience.
Sure.
And what that means is that we are very powerful beings, much more powerful than who we think we are and who we've been taught we are. And we've come into this physical experience in order to, and sometimes it'll be to play, and sometimes it'll be to grow and learn or whatever it might be. But the implication, if you study the spiritual literature, it's almost consistent across all spiritual and religious literature that who we really are is these amazingly powerful, wise, abundant beings who left that state, if you will, to come here. Now, there's part of that story that I agree with, and I, in fact, call doing that playing the human game, which is the superstructure, if you will, that the money game is a subset of. And one of the things that I have discovered, and I want to tell you also before I go into more depth on this, that everything that I say to you here and everything that I would say to you if you choose to find out more about this, none of it do you have to accept my word on. You will have the ability to prove it all to yourself. So this is not anything that has to be accepted on faith. So there's this game called the human game, and we start out as these infinitely powerful, you could even say godlike beings, who decided just like somebody somewhere came up with the idea of baseball. Somebody somewhere came up with the idea of football and golf and Monopoly and chess and everything else. Why they came up with it, how they came up with it, I don't know. The story's probably there somewhere. But a bunch of infinite beings, if you will, decided that they wanted to create a game and they wanted to play it. And I call it the human game. And the human game has two phases. Phase one, and again, understand when I tell you what phase one is, it may sound crazy and wild and you may think to yourself, why would anybody want to play a game like that? But I want to remind you of our discussion before about how crazy basketball and baseball and football and soccer and chess and everything else would seem to somebody from another planet if they looked at it objectively. So these infinite beings came up with this game called the human game, and phase one of the human game is convincing yourself that you are the exact opposite of who you really are. So if you start out being infinitely powerful, infinitely wise, infinitely abundant, phase one of the human game is convincing yourself that you're the exact opposite, and it relates to exploring what happens when you limit unlimited power. So in phase one, we create this illusion, this alternate reality, you might say, where we are, and I'm going to speak a little bit bluntly here just for effect. I'm being overly dramatic for effect. I'm not being disrespectful to me or Chris or anybody else on the call. But the goal is to convince these infinite beings, to convince ourselves that we're dumb, that we're stupid, that we're weak, that we're powerless, and that we're poor. And that's quite a task. You start out as an infinite being, and you can snap your finger and create anything, which is who I believe we all really are. And you convince yourself that you got no power, and you got no wisdom, and you got no abundance, and all the power is outside of you, as is the money. It's quite a challenge. And again, you could say, well, why would somebody come up with a game like that? But to me, that's what happened. So in phase one, we use all of our power, all of our creativity, all of our cleverness, all of our trickiness to create this alternative reality that we call the three-dimensional world, or you could call it the Earth or the universe or whatever you want to call it, which is a complete illusion, convince ourselves it's real, and convince ourselves, again, that we're stupid and powerless and poor within it. And we play this game for a while, just like we play the game, the money game, for a while. Now, ultimately, you can imagine that if you're an infinite being and you convince yourself that you're the exact opposite of that, you're ultimately going to hit a point of massive pain. And you're going to start to think to yourself, wait a minute, there's something that just doesn't make sense about this. There's got to be something else going on here. This just doesn't make sense. And I want to find out what that something else is. And when that happens, it's a signal that you're getting ready to move into phase two of the human game. And in phase two in the human game, you reclaim all the power that you hid in phase one. You reclaim all the wisdom that you hid in phase one. You remember who you are. You expand back into the infiniteness that's who you really are. But then you still stay here within the illusion. You still stay here within this alternative world and reality that we created. But you can start to play the human game without any limits or restrictions at all, which means that you can create any kind of a scenario within the illusion, just like Hollywood movie makers can make any story, any environment, anything appear real. Mm-hmm. You can create any reality, if you will, and play with it for the sheer pleasure of playing with it without any limits or any restrictions at all.
Wow. So you're saying that this phase one, what you call phase one of the human game, and I think it's very interesting what you said, Bob, that it does make it clear when you think about all the games that we as humans have created, baseball and golf and tennis, and I mean, they're all arbitrary rules and regulations that we've created so that we could have fun together. And what you're basically saying is that as infinite beings, we have created such a game, but in much greater complexity, much greater depth, and that what you call phase one is this kind of almost a downward spiral, we could say, even though it probably isn't really downward, but from being infinite down to complete finite limitation tininess, if you will. Convincing ourselves that we are tiny and small and unworthy, having in reality been infinite, and that's the process of phase one game. And then you're saying that phase two game is recognizing that there's something that's not right about that, and opening up, expanding and expanding and expanding. And what I hear you saying is that that fully realizing the phase two game creates then the ability to have almost unlimited possibilities in our life. Is that right?
Absolutely. Now, there's a lot that's taught in the typical self-help literature that suggests something that sounds very similar, except it doesn't work, which I have learned from personal experience, from doing it, teaching it, and trying it again when I was desperate, trying to stop my falls at various points. But
so how is what you do to teach different then?
Well, hold on one sec.
Okay.
One other thing is, I mentioned before that if you take a look at football or soccer or any of the games that we're playing and you look at them from an objective perspective, the rules, regulations, and structure seem crazy. It's not just games. Everybody that is on this call has looked around at this world that we live in, looking at the entire globe, and has looked at various things that are going on this planet or that went on in history and have said, that makes absolutely no sense. That is crazy. How could anybody ever do something like that? How could that be? And I did this all the time when I was in phase one. I would look around at stuff and I would say, I just don't get how that could possibly be.
You mean like the woman picking up a car off of her child or something?
Not that kind of stuff. Stuff like Hitler.
Uh-huh.
Stuff like one of my big pet peeves, and I don't know if there's anybody on the call that's in this business, but one of my big pet peeves has been the cigarette industry. And I used to think to myself, all this stuff has come out about these people at board meetings planning how to get young kids addicted to cigarettes so that they can make more money. And I used to look at that, and I used to think, how could a bunch of grown adults who have kids sit in a board meeting and make a decision like that? It makes absolutely no sense.
Right.
Or you look at some of the stuff with some of these people that were already struggling around the world that got hit by tidal waves, you know, and the little that they had was wiped out. And, I mean, all over the place, if you really look at this, I call it the Earth Amusement Park. It's insane.
Mm-hmm.
If you really look at it, it's as crazy and makes as little sense and is as arbitrary and crazy as the games in the context that I talked about. And it has to be because of what you're trying to do. Now, I believe when this human game first started, it started because a bunch of infinite beings were saying, I wonder if we could convince ourselves that we are the exact opposite of who we are. And it just started out as kind of an experiment. And then it became so fun, and it got more and more complex, just like most of the games that we play, not all, but most, get more and more complex over time. And it mushroomed into this gigantically complex thing that we call, again, three-dimensional reality with all of the sciences and everything else where we try to dissect it and take it apart. And then, but that's, to me, what the whole deal is about. And to me, the entire human game is a game that is created by and played in consciousness. None of it's real. It's all an illusion, just like when you're sitting in a movie theater and you're looking at the stuff up on the screen. It looks real, and it feels real, and it convinces you that it's real, even though you know it's not. You get sucked into it. But the equivalent in my model is, suppose you're in a movie theater, and a movie starts playing, and there's a bunch of characters up on the screen, and there's an environment, and a bunch of stuff's going on. The equivalent is if you stepped out of your seat, you walked through the screen, you became one of the characters in the movie, and became absolutely convinced that you were that character, having forgotten who you were sitting in the seat, and you became convinced that everything in the environment within the movie was real, and you then allowed it to play out, assuming that all of it was real. It's a game created by and played in consciousness. And the interesting thing is, if you look at what some of the breakthroughs that are coming out in quantum physics, most of which I don't understand, but enough of which I do, to understand that they're confirming this in their scientific research, that the whole thing is an illusion and it isn't real.
Since we just have a few minutes left, I'd really love it if you would share with people a little bit of what it's like for someone who's playing the Phase 2 game. You've talked to us about the Phase 1 game and how we've convinced ourselves that we're stupid and dumb and worthless and limited. When someone fully steps into the Phase 2 game, what is that like?
Well, there is not a rule or a formula for what it looks like because we're all infinite beings with infinite potential, and just like we are on this planet in human form, we all have different interests. So there is no common rule or formula for what it looks like because we all want to play with different things. But if you take a look at, you started out as an infinitely powerful, wise, and abundant being who had the ability to do and have and be anything. You created this alternative universe that we call the three-dimensional world. You convinced yourself you were limited. Once you shift into the game of seeing, in phase one, there's an aspect of your consciousness that is who you really are that I use, for lack of a better term, I call it your expanded self. But it's the real you. It's the infinite being that's who you really are. And this part of you's job is to keep you away from your power, to keep you away from your wisdom, to keep you away from your abundance, and to convince you that you're the exact opposite of who you are. When you move into phase two, this other aspect of yourself, and it's, again, there's no separation here. It's all one gigantic infinite being, but we have to talk about it as if it's separate. This other part of you completely shifts gears. And 24 hours, 7 days a week, when it used to be about limiting you,
and keeping you away from the truth and your power, it becomes the exact opposite. So what happens in the beginning of your experience in phase two is that your expanded self takes you on what I call the treasure hunt of the century and leads you to where you have hidden your power and your wisdom and your abundance and supports you in taking it back.
Mm.
And as you take it back, you expand and your consciousness expands, and therefore what becomes possible for you from an effortless perspective increases. And as you move more deeply into phase two and you reclaim more and more of your power and more of your wisdom and more of your abundance or your access to this cosmic overdraft account, literal things that you would call miracles become commonplace for you because you're creating the whole thing out of your consciousness. It's like if somebody decides to make a movie, they create the entire environment. They create the special effects that make things appear real. They create the total environment. They're gods in the environment and can do anything that they want with what's going on in that movie. And the more deeply you move into phase two, the more power and ability you have to do that in what's going on with you. Now, what is that going to look like if you actually had more power? And what is it going to look like if you actually tapped into this cosmic overdraft? It can look any way you want because you're an infinite being and you can create whatever you want. It could look like, and this is a way out example, but it's real. I've experienced it and clients of mine have experienced it. You could look at your bank account on a Tuesday afternoon and it could appear to have $10,000 in it. And you could look at your checking account on Wednesday morning and it could have $110,000 in it with no apparent source of where the extra $100,000 came from. Or you could receive a check in the mail for $1 million from somebody who said, hey, I benefited from something you did and I wanted to thank you. Here, go on and help a bunch of more people. I mean, it can be the most wild and craziest thing you can imagine because your consciousness is creating the entire illusion of what you're experiencing and you have total control over all of it. And since the game is not about limiting you and convincing yourself you're stupid and poor anymore, it's about showing you how magnificent and amazing you are, you start to feel and act and be more magnificent and more infinite, and the way people treat you changes. The whole game changes as you do this, what I call the phase two work, which is reclaiming your power, remembering who you are, seeing the truth of what's really going on and expanding ever more every day into who you really are until you get to the point where you can create absolutely anything, no matter how quote-unquote unrealistic it may seem, for the sheer pleasure of playing with it. Because that's ultimately what this whole thing is about, is fun. It's a game. Now, a lot of people on the call would say, well, a lot of stuff that's happened to me or that's happening to me now sure as hell isn't a lot of fun.
Right.
But what I will tell you is, from the infinite being that you really are, from that perspective, you're having a blast. And again, I'll take you back to the metaphor of a movie. If you're watching a movie that's a horror story and a whole bunch of awful things are happening in the movie makers had a blast making it.
Mm.
The actual story had a lot of scary, quote-unquote, evil, all kinds of things in it, but the movie makers had a blast making it. And who you really are has had a blast the whole time you've been playing this human game, even though from your limited perspective and mine, we could have judged a lot of it as being awful or terrible or struggle or pain or whatever it is, hardship. But the truth is, the infinite being that you are is and has always been having a blast. And I know that's hard to believe, but it's another one of those things that will become very real to you if this is a journey that you choose to take and you do the work and you expand. You will see that all of this kind of stuff is true, and you'll experience all these things for yourself. Again, there's no need to take my word on anything.
So can anybody make this shift to phase two? I mean, is there any special requirement or something that...
No, anybody can do it. It takes an enormous commitment. It takes an enormous amount of persistence and stick-to-itiveness and such, because if you can buy what I am saying, that everything that you think is real, that is in the world around you, that you have thought is solid and real, is not, and that all of it is morphable as a result of shifts in consciousness, then in order to show yourself that that is true in the phase two game and on the phase two journey, a lot of weird stuff has to happen.
that shakes you up and maybe scares you or makes you uncomfortable or whatever it is. So this is not a game for the meek or the lighthearted or whatever that saying is. It takes an enormous amount of discipline and commitment and persistence, because your whole world in life is going to get turned on its ear in order to open you up to who you really are and allow you to tap the power that's really available to you. And it's not always easy.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I say to people is, at the time of this recording, I am 40, I'll be 49 on Saturday.
Mm.
And I first discovered this whole phase two deal and started my journey of expansion 2 years ago. So for 47 years, I tried to make it all work from a phase one perspective and failed. And that's 47 years, you know, of 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, trying to make it work in a phase one world and realizing that it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the phase two world, it doesn't take that long. If I spent 47 years convincing myself I was the opposite of who I am, I don't have to spend 47 years expanding again. The expansion is a much more accelerated deal. But if I had to take, I mean, I've created literal miracles in my life in just 2 years. But if it had to be 10, if it had to be 15, if it had to be 8, I wouldn't care. If you look at the treasure at the end of the rainbow in the phase two game, what could be, I mean, from my perspective, and this is a judgment, what could be more worth spending your time on?
Right.
So to me, no matter how difficult or crazy or whatever it gets, it's worth it. And that's why I just kept at it, even when I felt like giving up or it was too much or I wasn't sure it was all real. It may have just been a crock. I just kept at it. And then ultimately, I moved into this space where I busted loose from the money game and so many other things that are totally wild, amazing things I never would have imagined would be possible for me in this lifetime are daily realities for me.
Well, we don't
it's
have
the most amazing game that I've ever seen. It's the most amazing creation.
So we're almost out of time, but would you share just one example with us?
Well, I could tell you all kinds of little stories, and most of them would take longer, but the biggest, sexiest story, I guess I would say, is, I would explain, is the busting loose from the money game. I live in a situation right now where I do not watch the balances in my checking accounts for my businesses or my personal life. I don't track the numbers. I do whatever it is that I want to do, write checks, which in the model of the phase two game is expressing appreciation, which you'll learn about if you decide to do this, with absolute trust and certainty that the money is going to be there for whatever it is that I choose to do and create and experience, and it always is.
Hmm.
Wow. There's no bounce checks. There's no tracking the numbers. There's no worrying about my retirement. There's no anything, and I'm living with this cosmic overdraft protection that I mentioned before as being a total reality. And again, you look at the ripple effect of that kind of a dynamic in your life, it affects everything. All of a sudden, which ties back to the beginning of where we started the call, everything in your life becomes about what brings you joyfulness and fun.
Hmm.
And what floats your boat, what you're passionate about, and you follow that without money being an issue. And when you start having the ability to do that, your joyfulness and peacefulness and fulfillment and all these things that we're all after in phase one but can't get in phase one become real and become practical, and then they just keep deepening and everything just keeps getting, for lack of a better term, better and better and better. But for me, it all opened up by the illusion of the money game cracking and dissolving, and in the process of doing that, opening up to all these other aspects of what's possible. But that, to me, was the gigantic breakthrough, and that is truthfully how I live every day. And it's not because I still had millions and millions of dollars left from selling the software company. It's because I opened up to this infinite abundance that's who I really am, and have expanded my consciousness through a process that I can teach you to open up to this infinite aspect of who we really are and to be able to live with it in a day-to-day world.
You know, Bob, I could go on talking to you all night. And part of me wishes that we could. And we need to draw to a close now. So, you know, at Healthy, Wealthy, Wise, we believe strongly in the power of intention to manifest outcomes. So share with us your current most important project and what intention you'd like us at Healthy, Wealthy, Wise and our readers and listeners to hold for you.
My passion right now is getting this work out to the world, because I don't know anybody And again, I'm going to have a whole series of busting loose things from different games. The money game was the first one, and then there's going to be emotions game and relationships game and business and other things.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one of the ones, this is what I started with, because I don't know anybody at any level of quote-unquote financial success that does not have stress and challenges and problems related to playing the money game as it's taught. And so much transformation can take place from busting loose from it that, to me, that's my most important project, and the greatest gift that I can share is the pathway to doing that. So that's what my my intention would be.
Great, thank you. And we will hold the intention that, that the wisdom that you've shared tonight and that our sharing does go out to everyone in the world, because I don't know anyone in the world who wouldn't welcome the opportunity to bust loose from the money game as well as busting loose from the others. What single idea would you like to leave our listeners with tonight?
Well, the thing, there's, my guess is from my personal experience is there are people on this call that think I'm nuts or I'm on drugs. There are people on this call that think this guy sure seems serious and passionate about this and maybe there is something here, or again, maybe you're thinking somehow inside of me a little voice is telling me that he's speaking the truth no matter how outlandish it is, or somewhere in between. But wherever you are on that continuum, as you go back to your life tonight after getting off the call, and as you go back to your life tomorrow, I would just ask you to look at everything around you, particularly when you look at anything related to money or numbers or the money game, and just ask yourself a question. What if what he said is true? What if I really am an infinite being? What if I really have access to an infinite supply of abundance and money, and by simply making some shifts and expansion in my consciousness, I could dramatically shift what I experience? What if I really am creating everything that's happening around me out of my consciousness, and I have the ability to expand to the point where I can really create anything that I want for the pure pleasure? What if that's true? And let your imagination swim a little bit with what might be possible in your life if that was true, and that's a good place to start. I also suggest you follow the link that Chris gave you, or maybe can send you by email to make sure you get it right. There's a guided tour of busting loose from the money game that's available. And if this is something that resonates with you, I suggest that you take the next step and perhaps participate in that experience and join me on this journey. And then, and the other thing I would ask you to think about is, are you feeling something? Even if there's some noise in your head, are you feeling somewhere a feeling or a pull or a tug that says, there might be some truth to this? And if you are, that is a sign that perhaps you're getting ready to jump into the phase two game. But see if that, you know, they call it the still small voice. See if there is a voice inside of you that's resonating with what I've said and that is thinking that there really might be some truth to this. And if it is, if you're feeling that kind of a voice or a tug, hearing the voice or feeling a tug, you got some pretty exciting things in store for you. Whether you join me on this particular journey or not, that's a sign that you're waking up to the phase two aspect of the game, and that's where the amazing fun starts.
Fabulous, Bob. Thank you so much. And what an exciting possibility. So again, for our listeners, I'll repeat that link that you can take the guided tour of busting loose from the money game that Bob mentioned. Go to www.healthywealthy, the letter N is in Nancy, wise.com/moneygame. I, again, will tell you that having gone through the program, it's absolutely remarkable and amazing. It's something definitely worth your time to check out. And Bob, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you for the opportunity.
We're grateful for that. And for our listeners, again, our next call, our next Passion Series call is on April 4th with Robert Kiyosaki, the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. We look forward to being with you then. And in the meantime, I'm going to open up the lines and say goodnight. Goodnight, everyone. Goodnight, everyone.